Okay, and help me to welcome Tim from the Live and Let Live group over here in Athabasca.
Let go, let God.
Let go, let God, see? I had it wrong. Sorry, Tim. Over here in Athabascaville and Haycock. So, Tim.
I wish I just had to read something. My name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am grateful to be sober and be here tonight. And I'm a little nervous, so please bear with me. And I'm trying to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And well, I'm really grateful to be sober. I know that it's it is a miracle. You know, it's all thanks to AA and a higher power in my life today, and a lot of friends. And I don't know. I guess I'll start with what it was like for me. Don't have so much time to cover. I guess I'll start way back when. Oh boy! First I was born. I didn't have a very good childhood. I was in a home until I was 5 years old, and then my mom had gotten us out from there. I had two older brothers, and I really don't remember much from back then. I just remember being really defiant as a kid, and my grandmother died last year, and I wanted to know what it was like when I was real young, like, you know, 2-3 years old. I asked her what I was like, and she said I was a real bug. So I figured, well, that kind of went with it. And, but I just thought, I do always remember being in my own head, and I felt like an alien even at that age. I just felt like I didn't belong. And so anyway, you know, at that point, I guess I was 6 years old, and I remember, like, when I was 7, getting in a fight with somebody with a neighborhood kid, and my mom growled at me, and then I actually put my fist through the window of the house where we were at and cut myself and all that stuff. You know. And so it wasn't a very good beginning. So, I just remember being really insecure and confused as a child, and getting into a lot of mischief. I think that was probably normal, but let's see. I was held back in third grade for a number of reasons, and I just remember, the politics and stuff of that in the 60s played a big part in the way I came up. I just remember seeing it visually on TV and all that, and, the Vietnam War, like Kennedy getting killed and, all that kind of stuff kind of influenced me a lot. And, the Vietnam War. And I know in fifth grade I got kicked out of class because I refused to salute the flag. So I don't know where that came from except TV. But that kind of like set the pace for me. And I think also in fifth grade I was persuaded to rob the library of all its change. You know, so like I snuck around and this guy was supposed to be keeping watch and he really wasn't. So when I came around the corner I had like this big pocket full of change and I hit the corner and the lady caught me. She said, "Oh my God." So anyway, I got caught ripping off the library. And the teacher was pretty cool about it. He said, "Well, we won't tell your parents, I'll just spank you here," and he did. So, but he never did tell my parents. So that was pretty bizarre, but so anyway, I remember my mom recently gave me all my old report cards and stuff, and I was looking through them and I was devastated because like in elementary school I did fairly well, and like in seventh grade you could see it like go downhill, between sixth and seventh grade I guess. I remember when I was young I had to say that. My dad drank a lot when we were kids, and I remember him, I think he was the only guy in Doylestown that got a DUI, like, way back then. You know, like, he had a nice, really nice race car, and he smashed it up in the middle of town, hit, like, four cars, and lost his license for a year. But I remember, and my uncle owned a bar in Doylestown, and everything kind of revolved around that. Like, on weekends and stuff, we would go to the bar and have pizza, and the kids would hang out and play shuffleboard, and the men would drink, and Pop would send me over to get cigarettes, and, you know, we thought that was really cool, and we'd sit up at the bar and drink Shirley Temples, and I just remember thinking, like, you know, I can't wait till I can, like, come here and, you know, sit up there with the men, you know, and, And my dad would come home, not always, well, yeah, pretty much always. He'd come home and he'd be drunk and he would tell us jokes. And it was kind of like we looked forward to that. Because he would come home and tell jokes and we'd all sit around and laugh at him. And of course, it wasn't every night that he came home in a good mood. You know, sometimes it wasn't a very good night. And I remember him and my mom got an argument about, we were a fairly poor family, so my mom used to mix milk for us, you know, powdered milk. But the cat had to have real milk. So my mom gave the cat powdered milk, and my dad got pissed off, you know, and I'm like, we're drinking the powdered shit, what the hell, you know. So it was pretty bizarre, but, you know, whatever, and the cat was healthy. So, you know, those were the kind of things, and I remember it was some difficult times, and, but, you know, they always provided for us, you know, we always had a roof over our head, clothes on our back, and of course, I was the youngest of three brothers. I have a younger brother, too, but he's 10 years younger. So, like, I was a guy, you know, like, every time, I always got the hand-me-downs. Like, everybody else would get the new stuff, and I would get the hand-me-down clothes, and it was kind of a bummer. I don't ever remember being too happy, you know, so to speak, when I was a kid. And I did get in a lot of mischief. In fourth grade, I think I had to write like 1,000 times I would not shoot spitballs at the music teacher on the blackboard, you know. So we kept ourselves entertained. But anyway, I was getting to where, when I was about 10, I guess, my dad gave us some beer. He used to drink beer of Schaefer. And I remember drinking it, and he told me that he only had like a half a can, but he told me after that he wouldn't give me any more because it made me honor. So I was like, well, it's because you only gave me half one, so. But, you know, so, but I remember stealing liquor from the liquor cabinet and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And my grandmother was like the first one to arrive at a family function and the first one to pass out. You know, she liked drinking her whiskey, and she usually always got smashed. And, which was to our favor at times, because I remember one time we were out at the end of the road throwing eggs at cars, and some guy turned around and chased us, and we ran back to the house real quick, and she's like, quick, hide in the basement. And the guy came knocking on the door, and she's like, oh, there's no little children here. We're like, cool, grandma's cool, you know? And when, by the way, I was like, we lived in cornfields. We were like the original children of the corn. Because we literally did hide in the cornfields and chuck corn stalks at cars, and one time we had a cop car. You know, but we knew our way around, so. But we lived in the country growing up, and, you know, I remember my first trunk was friends of ours, you know, like the nearest town, you know, friends were a couple miles away, and we used to camp out with them, and their brother, I was like 13, I guess, and their brother bought us some Boone's Farm wine, and we drank that, and we got sick as dogs. And puked, and, you know, we got wasted. And I remember that was, like, my first real buzz, you know, so I figured there had to be something better at Boone's Farm out there. You know, I never drank that stuff again. But I did, following that, I used to run track, and I was into sports for a while between 12 years old and going into 7th grade and all, but then I quit, and I got a job at a local Holiday Inn as a dishwasher. And, it was really easy to drink there, you know, and I mean, and I knew a lot of people that were older than me, and they had no problem giving us drinks. And, I often wondered later on what my parents were thinking. Like, I'd come home like 1 o'clock in the morning on a school night, you know, and get up and go to school and all that stuff. And, you know, this went on for a couple of years. I worked at that place for 2.5 years, and my drinking progressed there, and I actually became like the porter. You know, where they gave me the keys to everything, which wasn't a good idea, because they gave me the keys to the vending machine, so I used to, like, empty them out and all that stuff. And then I made my own key for the beer room, which was a hammer. And it just would hit the lock just right, and it would open up, and I'd go in and get my own stuff, and, you know. And, of course, I had another friend that worked at another restaurant, and they had a basement where they kept all the beer, and he used to slide them out this window. And we'd be out there waiting and stealing the beer, and, you know, I mean, it was a regular thing for us. And I remember We were at another one, and they used to have us unload the beer truck, which really wasn't a good idea. So we were unloading them into my car, and I didn't know if somebody had taken a couple out of the case, and I was driving home, and I got pulled over by a Buckingham cop, and you know, sure enough, he found the beer and gave me an underage drinking thing because the beer was missing, you know. So that was like my first experience underage drinking. I remember before I drove, I was into concerts a lot, music and everything growing up, Hendrix, you know, like I was born under a bad sign, you know, and all that stuff. But I remember going to a concert, I was 15, I went to Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and we went to this concert and we drank and drank, and then after the concert we drank and drank and did some extracurricular activity, and I couldn't tell the people how to get to my house, couldn't tell them how to get me home. So they called my mom like 3 o'clock in the morning and had her come pick me up at the courthouse. And this is all from what my mom tells me. She said she pulled up and I was dancing around the telephone pole singing, which I didn't do either of, so I was like, okay. And then she told me in not so many nice words never to do that again. So anyway, also when we were growing up, like I said, like when my dad was drinking, I always looked forward to drinking in those bars. And, you know, before that even happened, they changed the age of Jersey to 18. So we were on our way. You know, we were drinking over there when we were 17. And then we had this local bar with the Gardenville Tavern. We used to go there, and old John, he couldn't even see. And we'd go in there and buy beer all the time. He didn't even care, because I don't think he could tell who we were. But I remember we used to save our money, and then we'd go over to this little bar in Jersey and buy quarts of Colt 45, because that's all we could afford. And that was like the most potent beer we could buy and just guzzle them as quick as we could to try to get buzzed, you know. It was all about catching a buzz. And, you know, when I started when I was about 12 years, I just never stopped. You know, I got sober on March 1st, 2006. And, you know, like I say, I went to junior high school and I was like and then I graduated to very high school, you know, because that's what we went to school for. The party. I remember somebody hiding a keg in the trash can outside in the outdoor lounge. You know, we were drinking during the day. Parties were all the time. Every weekend there was a party to go to. You know, and parents actually bought kegs for us. You know, and had us drink there, and we were the guys standing by the keg, you know, feeding the beer out. And I also you know, got in a bunch of other stuff. Anybody that grew up during that time probably knows there was a lot of other stuff going on. I won't get into that. But I did believe sleep was a waste of time. So, trying to get you any idea. So, we would drink all night for days. And,
all night.
And we'd sometimes. Maybe even longer sometimes, you know. But, so anyway, somehow you know, high school was really bizarre for us. I can't really get into it because it's a whole different subject, but I did manage to graduate high school, and I had gone to tech school to be an electrician, and my uncle lived down the shore and wanted me to move down there to work for him. And the first thing he said when I moved down there, like 2 days after graduating, he was like, "Don't try to keep up with me." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" Well, you know, he's one of us, you know, and he could drink. And I definitely couldn't keep up with them, but I tried. And, boy, that whole summer was a blur to me. It was, like, different people every week on the block, just parties every night, every bar fights, you name it. I mean, it happened down there. And I just never stopped. I never saw a problem with it. Just thought it was a phase I was going through. It was a long phase. And, so at that point, you know, after 4 or 5 months of living down there, I really couldn't take anymore, and all the guys I knew down there, we decided to go to Florida. So we drove down to Florida for a while, and we got in a lot of trouble down there, got in fights, broke up a hotel, and from there, me and another guy drove back home to Bucks County, and I think we went, like, right to a bar in Jersey, you know, Forge and Amble, and, you know, it just never stopped for me. And I remember, you know, when I was I was 19, and I was at somebody's house, and they raided the house, and I got arrested. And I eventually ended up doing some time in jail for that. But in the meantime, I had met a girl, and she had gotten pregnant. And when I was growing up, I swore I would never have kids. I just thought the world sucked, and I didn't believe that it was fit for children, you know. But somehow, this girl got pregnant. She got pregnant, you know. And trying to be noble, I, of course, tried to do the right thing, and, you know, I said, well, I guess I'll marry you, you know, and I did. And I actually spent, while my daughter was learning to walk, I was in jail. So she learned how to walk while I was in jail. And when I got out of jail, I was worse than ever. I was into motorcycles a lot back then, and I kind of did that for a long time. And, you know, eventually that marriage broke up. And it wasn't a good divorce. It was pretty bad. It wouldn't let me see the kid for a while. And, you know, and I was totally out of control. But it wasn't me. And I swore it wasn't me. You know, it was just a victim of circumstance. And so for the longest time, I just drank away everything. I mean, I missed a couple decades there that I don't even remember. So eventually, my drinking changed to, you know, once in a while to all the time. And I loved it. It was my best friend. And, you know, my daughter was growing up, and I was living in rooms and places around the area. And I was living at somebody's house at the time, and then I eventually met another woman who I went to high school with, who drank just like I did. And we were like party buddies. And, you know, I was drinking heavy anyway. I was drinking quarts of vodka, you know, like it was nothing. And so I hooked up with this girl I went to high school with who partied just like I did. And we were trashed every night. And, of course, we decided to get married, you know. So it sounded like a smart thing to do, you know. And, let me see. If I'm missing anything here. Missing a lot, but anyway, so I ended up getting married again, and she had told me before, at the day of the wedding, like, don't drink before the wedding. And I'm like, yeah, okay. You know? You know? Like, yeah, I won't do that. You know? So she thought I did, but of course I did. But, and I was pretty trashed. And I remember being at the reception, and the bill for the bar was more than the dinners, you know, because everybody, once all the, you know, parents left and everything, we all hung out at the bar all night, and I remember driving home, like, if we get pulled over, it would be so embarrassed, like, in our tux and wedding gowns, to, like, get pulled over and get DUIs, because we were trashed. I shouldn't even have been driving. But I was always the designated driver. For some reason, I drove better when I was drunk. Yeah, okay. And, So I remember the next morning we were heading to Nantucket, and my wife was puking out the door, and I could barely drive because I was just so wrecked that it was ridiculous, and we were like, well, let's go anyway, you know. Well, it so happens, I missed this part, though. My daughter had called me after we set a date for the wedding. My daughter had called me and told me she was getting married the day after. Well, I told her I couldn't make it. This is one of my low points in my life. And, you know, I regret it to this day, but I've talked to my daughter about it. And, we've always had a very close relationship, thank God. And anyway, I missed her wedding, and we went to Nantucket. And we were totally trashed in Nantucket. We were on a fishing charter, and the captain wanted to kick us off because we were so trashed on the boat that he didn't really appreciate it, you know. So that tells you how that kind of went. And, you know, and this went on for a while, and I remember, you know, a couple of years in this, we bought a house before we got married, and a couple of years in this, I got injured. I injured my knee, and so I went to the doctors, and, you know, they told me I tore something in my knee, and they gave me painkillers. And I remember walking out of the doctor's office and going, this is cool. You know, it said, don't take any with alcohol. Okay. I read, take 4 and drink as much as you can. You know. You know, and I did. So I I got hooked on these things, and I proceeded to lie to the doctors because they were asking me if I was drinking. I was telling them no. And so I kept going back to the doctors, and I kept telling them I had to think about the surgery for my knee because I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it. So they kept giving me the pain pills. And I was drinking. I was drinking even more then because I could drink more. And so then I, continued with the lies, and I did get a surgery eventually, and then it ends up my knee was a lot more messed up than I thought, and I had to get a total knee replacement. So I prolonged that too, because I said, well, I can't get it right now. I have to wait. So they kept giving me the pain pills, and I kept lying about my drinking. And they would test my liver, and it would come up fine. And so they just never knew. So they would give me a prescription, and I'd drop it off at the drugstore, and the liquor store was right next door. And I'd go to the liquor store, and I'd pick up my drugs. It said, take four and drink as much as you can. And I did that for years, And eventually it led to even worse things, which I won't get into, but I was doing a lot of stuff and drinking. And I think I had totally gone insane, actually. When I think about it, I know I did. I remember getting into a friend of mine's truck while he wasn't there and trying to move it, and he had all his shotguns in there, and he came out flipping out. And was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just trying to get around, He was upset, man. And I didn't think anything of it, But so that didn't go over too well. But eventually, I ended up. I ended up lying, cheating, and stealing. It's funny because I was talking to this guy today at work, and he was telling me he was in a bad situation with his daughter's friend was with them at a shopping center, and he saw her pick up a pack of gum and put it in her pocket. And he asked, he said, why are you taking that gum? And she's like, oh, I found it on the floor. And she goes, no, you didn't. I know you took it. And then he proceeded to tell me that. And we were trying to figure out why maybe this girl would do that. And we were saying school, kids, whatever. And then he says, well, her dad, when he drinks, he likes to steal stuff. And I had to laugh, man. I'm like, oh, my God. Can I relate to that? And it was really funny because he was like, yeah, we'd get drunk and we'd stop and he'd go alongside the road and he'd take stuff and put it in his car and, he'd be sitting at a bar and see a picture on the wall he liked, and he would just take it and put it out in the car. I'm like, oh my God, I wasn't that bad. No. So anyway, I ended up. So this was going on for years, and things had gotten totally insane with my wife and I. I mean, she was stealing shit from me, I was stealing it back from her. And blah blah blah. This was going back and forth. And we ended up having a fire at our house, and then some guy showed up at my house we hadn't seen for a long time, and some stuff ended up missing out of my house, and I thought he stole it, and I was whacked out of my mind, and I went down to his house, and I terrorized his dog. I shot his dog with a fire extinguisher, and terrorized his girlfriend, I guess, and I left there, and I ended up getting arrested for that. For all kinds of stuff, and imagine terroristic threats, criminal trespass, receiving stolen properties. And so eventually, the cops came to my house and I told them what happened, and then nothing happened at first. So then we were drinking so much and stuff got so crazy, my wife called the cops and they were at my house again, state troopers. And she was sitting there doing shots of vodka, telling the cop that I had all these illegal guns in my house, and of course I was taking the guns out the back door and throwing them behind the shed. And so then they said, Tim, where's the guns? I said, oh, there's a pellet pistol beside my bed. And of course they found that, and it was no big deal. So then they made her leave. This didn't really go over very well at all. So anyway, in the meantime, I had seen a doctor, and they suggested I go to rehab for the addiction to the pain pills, and it wasn't for drinking. And I went to Live on Grin to get off addiction to a number of pills I was taking. And so I went to Live on Grin, and I remember being in this room with this heroin addict, and he was just crying and moaning all night. And he was 60 years old, and I was thinking to myself, like, I just don't want to end up like this, you know? I mean, I remember thinking that to myself, and they took us to meetings, but didn't really, I couldn't really comprehend it. I was so whacked out, and after 2 days, they told me I was detoxed. And I was like, okay, I've only been on this stuff for like 6 years, you know? And so what happened is my insurance wouldn't pay for it, and they wanted me to pay it, and the guy in front of me actually got in for free, and I got really pissed off, and I said, well, I'm not going. And, you know, I called my wife up and said, come pick me up. And she did, reluctantly, and I went home, and we drank, like, 2 bottles of wine. She shook her finger at me, told me I couldn't drink vodka anymore, and she rolled a couple of joints. And next thing you know, it was Monday, and the cops were knocking on my door, arresting me. So I ended up in jail. And geez, the day before she said she loved me, and that the next day she said you could rot in hell, you know. So she left me in jail. I couldn't get bailed out right away, and I eventually had to call my parents. You know, at 47 years old, calling my parents up and saying, "Hey, can you bail me out?" My mom's like, "What'd you do?" She's like, "Never mind, don't tell them." You know, so she came and bailed me out, and they took me home, and I started drinking. As soon as I got home, the house was half empty, all the stuff was missing, except the fridge and the beer. And I was sitting there drinking, and my cousin showed up, who was in AA. And I thought he should be there, you know, one of them kind of things. And we were talking, and all of a sudden another friend, Bradley here, called up, and he said, "This is your godsend." I'm like, "What, can we go get something?" Because I wanted to go out and get something, you know. He's like, "Yeah, I'll be right over." And I really don't know what was going on because I was still pretty much out of it. And he grabbed my shirt, my collar, and I thought we were going out to party, and he took me to an AA meeting. And I was sitting at that AA meeting, and I heard people talking about their experiences, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. And I raised my hand at that meeting and said, I'm Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. And it was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. I can't explain, it was like an out-of-body experience to me. It really was. It was definitely an out-of-mind experience, you know, because I was out of my mind. But I remember going at home that night scared to death. Scared to death, but I knew I didn't want to drink anymore. And I've been talking to some people, and they said, pray for the obsession to be gone, and I did. I didn't even know how to pray. You know, I just wanted the obsession to be gone, you know. I was afraid to leave my house. You know, I had these guys come and get me for weeks, and I couldn't, the meetings were right down the road, and I couldn't remember where they were. I mean, that's how out of it I was. I detoxed at home. I don't recommend anybody do that. It took me about 2 months to get all the shit out of my system. I mean, sweating, hallucinating. I thought cops were outside my house. You know, I'm not kidding. I saw tree police. You know, they were picking up trash that wasn't even out there. You know, I'm looking at them like, picking through the trash. Next morning, I'm like, there's no trash out there. It was unbelievable. So, I did, you know, this is stuff I don't forget. You know, this is stuff I don't forget. And I never want to go back there. And so I kept going to meetings, and thank God for good people in AA. Thank God for 12-stepping, because I got 12-stepped. You know, I didn't come in here willingly. But once I did, I surrendered, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to be sober today. That's why I'm standing up here. Plus, I'm trying to give back to AA what's freely been given to me. And so I started going to meetings, you know, like 3 times a day, because I was so whacked out of my mind, I was losing it. And I also was going to court and through divorce court at the same time, criminal charges and divorce. But, you know, I made it. You know, I'd go to meetings and I would gather some strength up to make it through the day. And I'd go home and I'd pray every night, you know, just to stay sober at that point. And I called a good friend of mine up. I'm like, I don't know how to pray. He said, well, you can use my prayer. Help. And that's what it was, too. You know, it's like, God help, man. Do something, you know. That's all it was for a while, you know. I mean, I just didn't know how to pray. I'm not a religious prayer. I grew up Irish Catholic. You know, my mom used to take us to church all the time, and I was scared to death of God, you know. I mean, to me, it was like burning hell when I figured I was going to, you know. And we used to go to Sunday school, and we'd go in one door, wait for my mom to leave, and we'd go out the back door and smoke cigarettes and stuff, and, you know, wait for him to come back and pick us up. And so I wasn't very religious, and let alone ever prayed. And but this is a spiritual program, and I've learned to have a faith today like no other I've ever had. And you know, I remember sometime before I got sober, I remember sitting there, and it was late at night because I didn't believe in sleep, and I was clicking through the channels, and you know, they had one of them prayer channels on, and I thought to myself, well, that's for people who need it. It's not that I didn't believe in God, I just felt like I didn't need God, you know. I didn't need God in my life. Well, today I know better than God. I know I need God in my life. And so anyway, I kept going to meetings every day. I just wanted to stay sober at that point, and had been through some stuff, and you know, was going to court for these charges and divorce, and my wife kept coming back to the house and breaking in the house and stealing shit, and I was, you know, trying not to flip out, and you know, the meetings saved my ass, I'm telling you. And and I had gotten this other sponsor, and I kept hearing him talking about, you know, being 3 years sober and still finding the asshole within, because he didn't go through the steps, and I'm like, oh man, I don't want that to happen. Because I did get sober, and then next thing you know, I was left with me, you know, looking in the mirror, oh man, you freaking asshole, you know. And it was killing me. It was killing me. I knew I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was definitely unmanageable. And you know, and I knew God could restore me to sanity, you know. And I just started turning my will and my life over to the care of God. So then I had to do the fourth step, which was like tearing me up. And so I called my sponsor, be like, write it down. I'm like, okay, yeah. You write it down? Like, no. You know, like a month would go by, and he's like, you writing that stuff yet? I'm like, yeah, I'm writing it. And I would call around, like, what'd you do, man? What'd you do? Call different people up to get some advice on how to do it, because I wasn't sure. You know, I was writing down what other people did, you know. These people screwed me, you know. And so I had to find out what my part was and everything. And turns out I had a lot to do with a lot. So, and doing the fifth step was even harder for me to... I kind of skipped the part. I did go to Penn Foundation for about 8 months of my first 8 months of my sobriety on outpatient, and they eventually kicked me out. Now my insurance cut me off because I kept going, and they kind of had, I got addicted to that because they had to wean me off. And but that was a big help for me as far as going through with, through the steps, and so I had a little bit of experience with that, and going through it with my sponsor, it was scary, and I felt, I didn't want to tell these things, you know, and just had a terrible feeling about it, but I did, and it was a relief to me to get this stuff off my chest. Of course, I just hit stuff that was on the surface, and I'm constantly doing an inventory on myself today, and, you know, it's, you know, became willing for God to take these defects away from me. I mean, I was willing to do that from the beginning. I just wanted to change. I didn't want to live like that anymore. And this is all about change. I have a complete willingness to do whatever it takes. Like, I know in the beginning I heard somebody talk about dancing naked around the fire.
Woohoo!
Like, if somebody had told me to do that in the beginning, I probably would have done it, you know? But now I'll be like, you go first. Yeah, so, but I want to stay sober today, and I'm willing to go to any length. And it's nothing but a miracle to me that I'm even sober. I drank for 35 years, didn't even think about stopping. You know, even through all the shit I went through, jail, divorces, many relationships. I lived with this girl in Doylestown in the 90s, and I was drinking heavy. And she had told me that I had to either move out or stop drinking. I said, well, can you give me a couple days? And I moved out. So that's kind of how that goes, you know. But that's how my relationships were. And so getting sober and being part of AA, man, I got some good friends in here, boy. I'll tell you what, there's nothing like this fellowship. I had some good friends out there that I hurt at, you know, so, you know, when I came to step eight and making a list of people I had harmed, it was tough. It was tough. And, you know, I had already tried to make amends to my ex-wife, and we had talked about it and all that stuff. And there was a little resentment there because, like, you know, she's like, why, you know, why now you get sober, you know? Excuse me. And actually suggested that maybe she should, but that didn't go over well either. So she didn't want to, obviously, but, you know, that was the path she wanted to take. And I, during my addiction, I was working at a very wealthy man's house. He lived in New York, and he had a place over in Jersey, and I took care of it and did a bunch of renovations on it. And he had an enormous wine collection in his basement. Very expensive one, and I would go down there on occasion and take a couple bottles of wine, and this was like over a year I did this, and the next thing you know I had like 100 bottles of wine. Well, it turns out they're all worth like a few hundred dollars, you know, and so when I got sober I called him up and I told him I had it, and he said, well, you can keep it. I said, no, you don't understand. I said, I don't drink anymore and I don't want them. It's like, all right, you can bring them back. So I took him back, and he goes, oh my God, I can't believe you took that much. It's like eight cases, you know. You know, he was like kind of shocked. He's like, I just thought it was a few, you know. You know, these are like 1960 wines and stuff like that. You know? I picked all the good stuff. And just red, no Chardonnays, you know. But, so I ended up making amends to him by, you know, I worked for him to pay off the money I owed him for the wine that was missing and a number of other things that were missing. And it was such a cool thing. What a thing to go through. Of course, I had some other people that weren't so receptive and really rather not see or talk to me anymore, you know. And I do construction and I was on a lot of big jobs, you know, for wealthy people, and I would manipulate materials or whatever it was, and wasn't good. I mean, and just like I was telling you about this guy that gets drunk and he steals things, I mean, I was like, oh my God, and like, why couldn't I see that, you know? But so anyway, 15 minutes. Okay. So today, let's see. Today, you know, like. I don't know, I get up every day with a new beginning, you know? Like, I get up and I hit my knees and I ask God for another day of sobriety, you know? And ask Him where I can help somebody else out. And, you know, I'm my home group's Let Go and Let God. I'm also GSR in that group. I try to get involved and I try to help where I can. And if somebody asks me to speak, I speak, even though I don't really want to. But, you know, all my friends today are sober, you know. Oh, yeah, I was at a meeting a month or two ago, and this guy shows up I used to drink with, you know. I'm like, no shit, you know. And, so I sit next to him, and then the break time comes, and I'm like, well, I have to say, I'm not surprised to see you. He goes, oh, you were much worse than I was. I'm like, oh. I was like, what? I couldn't believe he said that to me. You know, but, you know, I reached my hand out to him, and, you know, I'm hoping he gets it. He's still coming around, so, and he's going through a tough time. And it's, you know, like, you just got to surrender to this disease. This is tough. I mean, and also when I got sober, I was like 2 months sober, and I was talking to my sponsor, and he said, I would have these things, like, I'd be driving near my parents' house, and I'd be like, you know, they don't want to see me. You know, and then he's like, no, that's not them, that's you. So I was doing that, and I decided to drive to my parents' house, and it was just my dad there. And my dad, you know, my dad's my dad, and he's, God bless him, he's a good man. And we were standing there talking, and he looked at me and goes, you know, son, when you guys were kids, I had a drinking problem.
I was like, whoa, holy crap, I'm like waiting for lightning bolts.
You know? For him to say that to me was just amazing, you know, because he's just a proud man, and he just, you know, we never, like I say, I love you, and he goes, right back at you. You know? That's how he is, you know? You know? So, that tells you a little bit about him. And, still, I do it on purpose now. I go, hey, Bob, I love you, man. Right back at you. You know, I still try to get him to say it, but he won't. But that's the way he was brought up, I guess. I don't know. But, it's funny, because, you know, my family drinks a lot, and my uncle asked me at a family reunion last year, and he's like, did that stuff affect you a lot? I'm like, yeah. What do you think, you know? But it's such a blessing to be sober today. I've done some things that I can't believe I've done. I've been scuba diving with, you know, my sponsor's a scuba teacher, and he got me into doing that, and you know, it's just amazing the things we can do today in sobriety instead of just talking about them. And I've been blessed with work. And I did forget one part, like when I was still out there and I was using all them prescriptions and drinking, I developed a hyoidal hernia, my doctor told me. So I would wake up, you know, this went on for a couple of years, I would wake up every morning and throw up. And it was my hyoidal hernia, it wasn't the vodka. So, yeah, I had myself convinced of this. You know, my doctor told me it was. What the hell? You know, but he didn't know I was drinking. And so then when I got sober, I had to confess to my doctor also. And so I went in there, and I was crying my eyes out, man. I felt so bad. And I said, Doc, you know, I said, I've been lying to you all these years. You know, I've been drinking the whole time. And, you know, I'm an addict and an alcoholic. He's like, what? No, he didn't say that. No, he didn't say that. He said, oh my God, he's all right. You know, I really thought I was helping you. And he said, thank you for telling me. And it's so funny because I go to see him now, and he's like, well, we might as well not check your liver. You know? It comes up good anyway. But like he'll say to me, he's like, you know, I got a patient over there. You know, she might need a. You know, and he always says this stuff to me, and I tell him, like, hey, you know, if you want to give him my phone number, go ahead, you know, I'm feeling. And I think he's actually looked into it a little more, you know, rather being so freely with what he was doing. And I think it kind of opened his eyes to it, too, you know. I mean, I manipulated the man, you know. And God bless him, he's a great doctor and he's a good man, you know. And making amends to my parents just by being sober. Amazing. My mom, I call her up, I tell her I love her, and she's just like so happy to talk to me. You know, and it's amazing. My daughter, she's just a miracle in my life, you know, and she has been since she was born. And, you know, we talk about stuff today. We talk about God, we pray, and we, you know, I say stuff to her that I've learned in AA, like, you know, be patient, you know, and her husband, Meathead. I definitely have some tolerance towards him. I'm working on it. You know, he can really push my buttons, but you know what? God bless him too, you know. And so many other people in my life. I have a brother who's an alcoholic, and he's been in and out of the program. And you know, and I try to be there for him, but it's hard. It's hard with family, and you know, he doesn't want to be sober. You know, I said, if you want to stop drinking, let me know. And that's kind of where I leave it with him. And the people I know in these rooms, oh my God. It's like, I come in here, it's like, it inspired me when I first came in, because I kept on seeing all these people that disappeared, that I knew. It's like, oh, there you are. I thought you were in jail or something, you know. Because that's usually where I saw them, you know. But it's amazing, I don't know, I can't express it enough, my gratitude, and try to eat up these last 10 minutes here, so. Alright, so what else? Oh, I do have stuff in front of me to read. Sought through prayer and meditation. I do that every day. I was actually doing that on the way over here all day, last night. I mean, you know. And, says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And that's like a key thing, as a result of these steps, not as, you know, it means doing the steps and actually having a spiritual awakening as a result of them. And, you know, life is so different for me today compared to what I used to be, and it's constantly changing. You know, what did they say? Pain is like this touchstone of the spiritual growth or something like that. And I hate growing because pain hurts, man. But, you know, it's not too many days that there's not some kind of pain I have to go through, and then I can actually, I look at it differently today, and I can actually grow on it and become a better person. Make mistakes all the time. I'm driving down the road. I actually had road rage, believe it or not, before I got sober. Okay, yeah. But, so I'm driving down the road, and I'm behind this guy going, so I'm like, people just want to go as fast as they want to go. And I thought, that sounds pretty stupid, because I want to go faster. But my mechanic asked me why there wasn't any whiskey dents in my truck. I thought that was hilarious. Whiskey dents. Because I did smash up two trucks before I got sober, and I actually smashed one up after I got sober. 2 weeks after I got sober, I smashed my truck up. But, you know, I took the blame, and it was my fault. So it's amazing today that I can just not pass the blame and just kind of suck it up. And, let's see what else. I'm sorry. Concerts. Oh, I did get to go to concerts again, actually. I finally got a nerve up to go to a concert with a friend in sobriety. Of course, they were smoking all kinds of stuff there and all, and I was like, oh my God. But you know what? I didn't even have an urge, you know. Oh my God, no. Yeah, God has a sense of humor, too. I went to another one at Sellersville, and I'm walking through the crowd, and there's my ex-wife. My seat's right next to her. So she got up and left. So I took her seat. But, you know, God does have a sense of humor. It's all I could think of when I was sitting there. I'm like, oh my God, it's so fun. You know, and all these people have been sitting right next to her. I think I ruined her buzz. But, you know, I'm sober today. That's what I care about. I wouldn't have it any other way today. I just can't believe the good stuff that happens in my life. You know, I always get, like, I'll be out of work for a couple of days, and I'm my own worst enemy, you know? Like, I'll just start thinking the worst, and something good always happens, you know? And it always works out. It's like, and so I'm learning through that that I don't have to worry. I just got to let go and let God take care of it, and it helps me to deal with everyday life. And I've always had an issue with society, and it's still a little hard for me to deal with. So. But I'm learning to find the good things in it today, you know, rather than looking at all the bad. And did I mention the friends? Yeah, I think I did. Meetings. Oh my God, there's so many meetings in AA. I thought there was more bars than meetings, but there isn't. There's more meetings than bars, that's for sure. When I first came in, there was like five meetings right around my house. I couldn't believe it, you know. And the meetings I did in out of area, in Florida, you know, and it's just been amazing. Everywhere you go, it's like we're all there for one purpose, and that's to be sober. You know, I come here because I want to stay sober, you know. It's all about. And I do the steps because I want to change and live a better life. And, you know, I can't, let's see, good meetings and bad meetings, how about that subject? Can we go there? Because I think there's something to be had in every meeting, you know, whether I think it's good or bad. My sponsor told me sometimes we learn what not to do, which really opened my eyes up. So we learn that from people in meetings and whatever, and I think everybody has a place. Primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. That's like amazing. And you know, the only requirement for AA is to, I want to stop drinking, you know. So, you know, these things, I was always told to keep an open mind, you know. And sometimes I, you know, no, you're not staying sober, you know. Well, that's not right. It's important to keep your hand, keep the door open for people who are struggling. I've been so lucky to come in and not go back out. And I know there's a lot of other people who struggle with that. Stay close to God, stay close to meetings, and help you be in the right place. And I really can't think of much more to say. Except keep coming back.